Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Welcome back to Okla Said, the official Okla Ed podcast, and I'm errandless today as I scroll through the chat that was the fifth Sunday policy chat. Aaron's busy doing cool things, and syncing up our calendars this week was, well, as it turns out, not possible. So here I am delivering my half of the fifth Sunday policy chat, which are always good. And for those of you that do not participate in the Okla Ed chat very often or only listen to the podcast, the fifth Sunday policy chat occurs in months that have five Sundays in them. And so on that fifth Sunday, we talk all things policy. That chat is usually hosted by Sean Heim, and you can follow him on Twitter at Sean Heim. He's the director of the OSSBA, which is the Oklahoma School Board Association. So let's dive right in, shall we? Question number one, what characteristics do you think are most important in determining who you will vote for in the governor's race? So we are to the point in our election season where we've got a choice, two choices for governor, more choices than that, but we've got one Republican, one Democrat, and a few other independent and libertarian candidates. And Dr. Jason James responds to this, and he is at James49Jason, and he said, the most important characteristic to get my vote will be the candidate who seeks input from the professionals regarding Okla Ed, not the politicians. I can't stand it when elected officials want to reform us without talking to us. And I think you would get 100% agreement from teachers on this, that so often reform that comes from our state government and our elected officials is very rarely sought out within, they rarely seek input from the educators. Everybody's had a teacher. Everybody's had that one experience that ruined the educational experience for them. And so sometimes I just wonder if some of these policies that don't come out are sort of rooted in that, this is the one thing, if I could fix the one thing in education, this is what it would be. But I do like Dr. James' tweet there. I think all too often educators are left on the side. And I think that was one of the really important things that came out of the walkout from last spring. Teachers made their voices known. They made their voices heard. And I think there's some indication there that those voices will not go away now just because we've done a couple of things. Oklahoma is way behind in how they handle education, what they are trying to do with education. And we've got several steps to go before we can catch up to what I would consider a world-class education environment. Having said that, the educators that we have are world-class. And our representatives and our citizens, I hope they recognize that because we're losing them left, right, and center, in my opinion, as they seek other environments. Question two, what characteristics are the most important in determining your vote for the state superintendent? So if you've taught in Oklahoma for any sort of length of time, for a long, 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 long time, I think 20 years, we had Superintendent Breezy, or Sandy Garrett, and she was a 20-year state superintendent. A lot of things happened under her watch, but she was steady. You knew what she was. You knew what you were going to get. She didn't do any. She didn't. She wasn't super one way or the other. She was even keeled and sort of like maintained the education in Oklahoma. Maintained policy and kept us sort of moving in one direction. And I believe that House Bill 1017 was a House bill that was passed under her watch. She did not seek re-election and finally decided that she had been state superintendent for long enough. And Janet Barisi came in, and Janet Barisi was a dentist, and she came in with a lot of reform ideology. She was not always positive with her educators. Depending on who she was talking to, she would either love them or send a ton of negative remarks their way. And she was the spearhead on a lot of quote-unquote reformy things, but not reform that was necessarily good or helpful. She lasted for 4 years before she came in third in the Republican primaries to Joy Hoffmeister, who's our current state superintendent. And has been a dynamic change of leadership from Barisi to Hofmeister. Very positive change. So when considering characteristics that are most important for a state superintendent, what are those things that you are looking for? And Becky Maldonado, Senate 16, she is at Team Senator Becky. She said, being able to analyze research to lead the state in best practices for education. I think Superintendent Hofmeister has done a good job of trying to, I don't want to say normalize is the right word, but she's brought back sort of this sense of calm. She's very vocally supportive of educators at every chance she gets, and she does a very good job with that. And I think she's been intentional in the choices that she's made, too. She doesn't seem to have made choices that fly completely one way or the other, and I think that's what, you know, what Becky is sort of referring to. Let's look at research. Let's analyze what the research says that can help our state become better when determining what educational changes need to occur. And I think in some ways, our current situation with the state superintendent is an upgrade. I think in a lot of ways, our state superintendent is an upgrade compared to the Ms. Barisi years when it was just very crazy and chaotic. Very, very chaotic. So there you go. There's Becky Maldonado's tweet. I myself am a fan of Superintendent Hofmeister, and I don't mind saying that that I support her in how she's thinking. Now, having said that, we don't have to agree with every single point of view that our leaders have, but we do need to understand that they have a big picture view and that they are moving us in the right direction. And I think Superintendent Hofmeister has done that, and I don't know that anybody else could that we could elect could continue doing some of the things that she's done. She's been a unique personality that has filled that spot in a good way, and I don't mind saying that. The Democratic candidate is is John Cox, I believe, and he was also Superintendent Hofmeister's ran against when Superintendent Hofmeister won the position 4 years ago. John Cox was also running against her as a Democratic candidate, and believe it or not, I got to hear both of them speak. And 4 years ago, they both held some similar views on some things and some differing views on others. So I don't know that we would be in terrible, terrible, terrible shape with John Cox. But I think at the same time, I like some of the decision making that's coming from our State Department over the past 4 years. So question three, what are the most important actions Okla Ed can take to address the teacher shortage crisis? And this is a crisis, and I was talking with a colleague this morning, and outside of Oklahoma, I guess people don't understand what a crisis we're at with our teachers. We can't continue down this path of emergency certifications at record levels for people that want to teach. We're at the point now where we'll take any warm body that we can get into a classroom, and that's scary because you get one shot. You get one shot with your students. You only get one shot at that third grade teacher. You only get one shot at that fourth grade teacher. And if that teacher is not prepared or ill-prepared or underprepared or leaves after 6 weeks because teaching isn't what they thought, then that damages an entire classroom. And that's frustrating. And in my personal opinion, our elected leaders are not quite giving the thought and consideration of retaining teachers the attention it needs. This is a big deal, and we've lost excellent teachers to other states, which has put us now in this shortage. And it's been a very frustrating time to live through as an educator. But Matthew Merritt, and he is at MMerritt1, he said, recognizing that the teacher shortage wasn't created by one problem and can't be answered with a single solution, Oklahoma needs to support its teachers financially and morally. We all want what's best for our children, and a few bucks helps, but more must be done. And I think, I hope that we started down that road of more must be done last spring. It shouldn't be major headline news when we decide to fund education. It shouldn't be major headline news when we decide to give our educators a living wage. It shouldn't be major headline news that we want to lower class sizes. But in Oklahoma, that's what it's become. When we can do those things, it's major headline news. And I would just encourage our elected leaders to look at other states that have done it, that are, you know, quote unquote, doing it right, and look at how those states have organized their education system, what they're doing well, what they're able to capitalize on, and how can we apply some of those things to our situation here in Oklahoma. Every state is different, but there are things that we can grab from other places that we can tweak and change and modify to fit Oklahoma. We could even look internationally. Let's look at other great school systems and education systems, and how can we take some of those pieces and put them into Oklahoma. So yeah, the teacher shortage is real. It's going to take more than a few dollars of extra income. It's going to take some other more systemic change, looking at class sizes, looking at how you fund professional development, looking at how you support the infrastructure of the school. How are we taking care? Like over 25% of our students live in food insecurity, have food insecurity. How are we making sure that they are nourished? Because without a nourished student, learning becomes almost impossible to do. So there's a whole thing that's tied into that. It's not just teachers and buildings and desks. There's a whole system there that has to be analyzed and looked at and assessed. And that's going to take some time, and it's going to take more than one shot in the arm. Question 3B was for the legislators, and we've had several legislators who have begun to participate in the Oakland Ed Chat every Sunday, and I thank you for that. I can appreciate the willingness of our elected leaders to engage in Oakland Ed. It can sometimes be a difficult conversation, and we can disagree, but I always appreciate understanding your points of view on things. I can remember talking with some legislators who were just not thinking the way I thought. I can appreciate legislators with an opposite point of view engaging educators on Twitter. We can agree to disagree, but we can have a conversation, and that is important. And so for you legislators that come to Oklahead and you learn, or you ask questions, or you participate, I appreciate that. So what do you think for legislators? What are the most critical, important future legislative actions to address the teacher shortage crisis? I went with John Eccles here. He is at John Eccles, and he said, talking to educators, I am told we must, one, retain, and two, get new education graduates. Those are accomplished by continuing to increase classroom funding and pay, but also listening to teachers and treating them with respect. I'm committed to continue on a new path. I love this tweet because in just conversation with some of my friends who are educators, most of the time I would prefer to have respect as an educator than pay. Because I think if you have respect and you've earned respect from your community, the pay will come with that. But if you're looked at as a babysitter, or you're looked at as you will do what I say, and as educators, we're not free to teach children in ways we know best, that diminishes the professionalism and the respect that I think teachers have earned through the sacrifices they're making. And so I can really appreciate John's tweet here with retaining and getting new graduates, and also trying to treat the teachers with respect. That's really hard because, man, once you get grades going, that becomes a real deal, and the gloves come off and things can go south in a hurry. So just understanding what's happening with this whole education system, I think, is critical. And John summed it up really well from a legislative point of view, and I can appreciate that. Question 4, what is your message to legislators for why we need a long-term Oakland Ed funding plan? My message to legislators for why we need a long-term funding plan is this. For a long time, we've been caught in this oil cycle of boom or bust. And depending on the price of oil, Oklahoma's economy is good or shaky or bad. And I would love to see more diversification there. I am nowhere near aware of all of the different types of revenue streams that Oklahoma does have in existence. But I think I read from a reliable source that something, when you're looking at the budget, there's a very small amount of budget that can actually be negotiated because the rest of it is already accounted for. So I just wonder if we look at some of the laws and some of the things and the revenue or tax systems that we've put in place that were signed into law in the late 60s, early 70s, and 80s, identifying those things, revisiting those things, and let's have like a major update on what our tax structure looks like, where our revenue streams can come from, and adjust it for a more modern society. We're not a work while the sun is up society anymore. There's all kinds of different ways that we can look at trying to help our state get a revenue stream that can be more consistent over time. We went through those several years where it was shortfall. And in the process of doing that, we looked at a couple of, we passed a couple of tax cuts. And yay, tax cut, but that lowers revenue in one regard. So where do we get that other revenue from? I know a lot of educators look at the gross production tax and they want to put that back at 7%. And instead of the, I think it was at 3%, which was very, very low when you compare nationally what's going on. And I don't know that that's necessarily a world beater perfect way to do it, but it's a start. But again, it's on oil, and oil will be boom or bust. So I would like to see something that's a bit more diversified than that. Christina Steiner, she's at Profe Steiner. She said, "You will not live forever. The younger generation is going to grow up. Therefore, they need to be educated and trained to take over and lead our world. They are not receiving this education at home. Schools and educators must be valued and supported." That's why we need the long-term funding plan, because we're in a reactive state right now instead of proactive. So we're reacting to situations. We can't be proactive with situations. And that limits what schools can do, as they also cast their gaze towards the future. The same question then went to the legislators. What do you need to hear from Oklahoma Ed advocates to champion long-term funding plan? And I didn't find a specific tweet on this because I just couldn't find one that seemed to match that question from the legislative point of view. But Sean Heim did put a graphic up. Let me pull it up here. And on this graphic, he said for this one, develop and implement a long-term funding plan to make Oklahoma Ed regionally competitive in teacher pay and per pupil funding. So on this graphic, per pupil funding in Kansas leads the region at $10,329 per pupil. They have about 497,000 students enrolled in their public schools. Missouri is next at $10,231 per pupil, then Arkansas at $9,805 per pupil, then New Mexico at $9,724 per pupil, and even Texas, who we like to compare ourselves with a lot, is still right above Oklahoma in per pupil spending at $9,081, and then Oklahoma per pupil spending is $8,075. So, in Oklahoma, there are 688,511 students. I'm not sure how old the state is. It's relatively new, but the regional average is about $9,744, and Oklahoma comes in well below that in per pupil spending. So addressing some of those issues is really important. Per pupil spending is important because it can help lower class size. It can help schools modernize their equipment. When we're in school buildings that were built 100 years ago using equipment that's 30 years old, that's not good for anybody. And whether school districts want to admit it or not, they have to move towards one-to-one programs. I mean, that's just where we are as a society right now with technology. It's hard to do that when the funding is just, you don't know what it's going to be year to year to year. Question 5, what are your top priorities for the new Oklahoma Ed money for your school? So I went with Christy Cooper here. She's at Chris Coop 80. She said, invest in programs, smaller class sizes, history books from this century. That's what she wants to use the newfound money for. And it's interesting, Christy Cooper works in the Middell School District. And Dr. Cobb, who is the superintendent over there, tweeted after the new money was budgeted for schools, he said, we can fully staff one building if we took all of our new money and put it there. We can fully staff one building from top to bottom. And so that's just replacing the cuts and the teachers that they've had to let go or the teachers that they haven't filled when teachers have moved on. And so it's not like there's a huge ton of money that's coming in. And, oh, by the way, as Christy Cooper points out, we need to get current books. We need to invest in programs in schools to help our students feel that sense of connection inside the school building, to offer them different opportunities to learn and to grow. And smaller class sizes is important. If you think teaching a class of 50 compared to teaching a class of 20, If there's no change in that, step into a high school classroom and do that. Step into a classroom full of 31 kindergartners with no teacher aid and tell me class sizes aren't important. So question six, excluding funding, what is the most important OCLA ed issue for next year's legislative session? There's a lot to choose from here. There's all kinds of things. Funding, of course, is always running around in the background. With me, I just wonder, what mandates are we required to do in Oklahoma that are not federally mandated? What is our state government telling us that we have to do that the federal government is telling us we don't have to do or hasn't mandated that we do? And I just wonder where we can save money there. I know one of the things that we've done on the high school level is pay for students to take the ACT, and we've eliminated some of the end of instruction exams. I think that helps. But I just wonder what else we can do. Well, wonder no more. Sherry Gately has an idea, and she is at Sherry Gately. She said, flexibility at the secondary level. We are doing ICAPS in middle school now, but there is little flexibility with high school credits required for graduation to put students on true pathways. Career tech classes should count for some of the required electives or additional core. I kind of like where she's going here. We're in a very rigid setup at the high school level about what students have to graduate. There's a method to that madness, I know, but I just wonder if there's a way that we could offer some different alternatives. Not every high school student that I've taught needs to go to college. They need to go to something else. So can we start providing that for them in high school? And I like that tweet. So question seven, Oklahoma will have a significant number of new elected officials in 2019. What should OCLA ed advocates be doing to build relationships and share information with lawmakers? So Lavelle Compton, he is at Lavelle X Compton. He said, don't be shadow leaders. Being a public official is an honor and a privilege. Those that are in that position must work to build relationships. That relationship building should start before problems happen. It's easier to talk with somebody about a problem that exists if they know who you are, if you've talked to them a couple of times, if you've exchanged some emails. It's easier to have a conversation. And so what Lavelle is saying here is, hey, you know, remember, you're elected to work with the people. So let's start working on building those relationships, and we can start talking about problems before they happen, being more proactive instead of reactive. I really liked that. Question B was for the legislators. What's your advice for OCLA ed advocates to build strong relationships and share information with new lawmakers? And this comes from Carrie Hicks. She's at Hicks for OK. She's a Senate candidate here in the Oklahoma City area. And she said, I've been actively listening to constituents for the past 17 months on the doors. People are willing to share their stories if you listen. OCLA ed advocates are your neighbors, coworkers, family members. I look forward to building strong relationships with all in Senate District 40. Question eight, how will you work to improve voter turnout for November 6th? And I know that several school districts are offering that day off so that teachers can go participate in the voting process. Voting is a very important thing that we get to do in the United States. And it's something that where I just wonder if we understand the importance of it. Your vote truly does matter. If everybody that didn't vote voted in the last election for me, I could be the president. I mean, even including electoral college and all of that stuff. We need to vote. We need to get a larger percentage of our people to vote. And we need to understand that elections have consequences, and your vote can have an impact on what the consequence will be. So Cindy Johnson, she's at Johnson Math, said, I will not be silent. Everyone I know will get multiple reminders. Question nine, how are you sharing the great things happening in your school with local lawmakers and other key influences in your community? So how are you doing that? They've got to know the story. And you know what? Our local elected leaders need to know what's going on, good, bad, and ugly. They need to know the great things that are happening. They need to know the struggles that we have, and they need to know the failures that we're experiencing. They need to see the whole picture. It's important to be be transparent in what we're experiencing. But I like what Stephanie Hinton had to say. She's at The Steph Hinton. She said, sharing stories. Mostly, I post a lot, and I podcast, which anyone can and should listen to, because I get to interview the most amazing educators across the state. Her podcast, by the way, is Passing Notes. It's very good, and she does talk with some great people. Question 10, what are your expectations for your state organization? And here come a lot of acronyms, OSSBA, CCOSA, OEA, PTA, PLAC. I know there's probably some that weren't mentioned there, but what are your expectations for your state organization? I think you can make a case that there was some some stress between certain of those organizations and their constituents, members last spring. And it can also be challenging too when you have an organization that's on the admin side and one that's for the teacher side, and sometimes those get crossways. But what are your expectations? We've got to be able to clearly define what the expectations are for our organization so that they can help support us when we need it. And to that end, Becky Maldonado at Team Senator Becky, she said to back up the teachers. And so I think that's really important. I think another thing for this, for these different state organizations is I don't have time to read all the ins and outs of every single bill that's going to affect education. It's very difficult, especially when there's 200 or 300 bills coming along that are going to touch education in some fashion. Some of these organizations do a great job of saying, this is what this bill does. And then it identifies the main points of that bill. It takes out all the legal speak. It puts it in normal everyday words, and it lets us know what's getting ready to happen. And so the OSSBA, they do a text alert. So sometimes there's a bill that needs action right away or needs us input from the constituents, and they have set up a text alert system, and you can text at OSSB from your cell phone. Text the message of the text is the at symbol OSSB for board, and you text that number to 81010. That's the remind phone number. And anytime something comes up that the OSSBA wants to share, you can get information on that. And they're an excellent source of current law, current bills, current legislation, all that kind of stuff. So one more time, on any cell phone, you can text at OSSB for board to 81010. So there you go. There's the legislative update. Sort of here's what's coming up in the spring, what's important to us. My boom sauce tweet of the night went to Jennifer Seitzinger for Room 20 Awesome. And this was in response to question 4. What is your message to legislators for why we need a long-term OCLA Ed funding program? And Jennifer said, planning ahead takes commitment. Our kids are worth it. It will take additional funding to ease the teacher shortage and overcrowded classrooms. I'll say it again. Kids are our greatest resource, and she is on the ball with that. So there you go. There's the Fifth Sunday Policy Chat without my good friend Erin. It's just not as fun when I can't talk with her, but thanks for tuning in tonight. Coming up on the next podcast will be the chat moderated by Todd Gregg, and he is at Mr. Gregg, and it is Teaching Through Student Inquiry. He is an excellent teacher. He's in the Midwest City High School. He does amazing fun things with his students. He's pushing some boundaries. He's trying different things, and he's on one ginormous learning swing through education. He's trying things out, and he's trying to make an impact on his students in a positive way. So I hope you'll join us for that one. And if you enjoy the podcast, we would appreciate a little rating in the podcast app of your choice, whether it's an iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever you're getting this podcast through. We'd appreciate that. All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
You're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.